coming to these for a number of years. I'm getting pretty gray, and I'm not over 400 miles away from home, so you can't call me an expert. We live just 50 miles north of Rapid here, just off the foothills of the Black Hills. We're about a 14-inch rainfall area. You know, we've predominantly cool season grasses are our native grasses. The ranch, like Jack said, is run by me and my brother, and being kind of afraid of what Obama was going to do to us last December while we give away half the ranch to my son and my nephew. And it was kind of like Rich said, they're doing all the work anyway. They might as well have some ownership in this. And with those guys there, I mean, they allow us to do what we do. We're a commercial Angus ranch, just northeast of the hills, like I said. We're a total AI operation in that we AI everything two cycles, and anything that doesn't stick AI goes down the road, no matter what she is. Either if she's bull bred, we'll sell the animals off their private treaty. If not, why, the young stuff we'll send to feed yard and put those on feed down in Kansas. We market everything then out of the feed yard to through U.S. Premium Beef, which we were a founding member. We've, you know, looking at this deal of cost, you know, attending a lot of these, and you get into a situation where you need to do something. And we had had some irrigated farming. You know, we farmed 400 or 500 acres of irrigated. It never really met our total feed production. And, you know, we were coming out of 7 years of drought up here 3 years ago. And I was taking a really hard look at what we needed to do to make our ranch more profitable. And that irrigated place in the back of my mind was the last thing I'd ever sell. Because, it's got us through numerous dry years. But in doing an analysis on it, you know, taking the time, sitting down, and really studying it, the thing was costing me money. Not only was it costing me labor and fuel and machinery, and, you know, you go down the line, we was putting $50,000 worth of equipment in 400 acres, you know, like you're talking about, real easy to do. You know, and I didn't have anybody that really wanted to farm. That wasn't what the guys want to do. They want to breed cows. And after looking at that, made the decision to sell it. And it was, looking back, timing wasn't exactly right. I mean, this was before corn market jumped. But the thing that I knew when I did sell it, I was going to have to get really aggressive on buying feed for the operation. And, you know, and my timing was right on that. In that, you know, we'll use futures market to price corn. My goal is always to buy corn under cost of production. And by using the futures market, I'm able to do that. And, you know, consistently I've done it the last 3 years. I went into some marketing contracts with growers for alfalfa hay. And I'm always in the open market on hay. Whenever I can buy feed for under cost of production, I'll load up because it isn't going to stay there forever. 3 years ago, Laid in 700 ton of hay at $35 a ton. And you can take some loss if you can get it bought cheap enough. So, looking at that, and then don't be afraid to analyze what you're doing, and maybe your presumption, isn't exactly right. So what I really like to go into is 10 things that I think makes our ranch profitable. Now, most all of these we've spent money on. I mean, I've never bought into the least cost producer. There's a couple of things coming to these that we've always talked about. One was least cost producer. The second was crossbreeding. And I've done both to some extent. But here are some of the things that I think that have really helped our ranch be profitable. Number one is short duration grazing. I started out really small. We were originally doing it with just our replacement heifers. And I did that probably for a period of 10 years on replacement heifers. And I was starting to see a lot, some change out there in the range condition. And, we were able to run higher stocking rates. And I think, boy, there's something here. So we, after about 10 years on the heifers, well, then we went to the cows. And we went, we used to put them in groups, and we'd have, 100 here, 200 over here. And so then we went to running them all in one herd. And through doing that, our goal is to get through every pasture before we start AIing. So we've got, depending on the year, 3 to 4 weeks that we'll move those cows every 3 days, 2 to 3 days. And this flash grazing, you've got a month's worth of grazing out of the deal, and you haven't really got into anything, because normally the moisture's coming, the grass growing fast. And the thing that it does for you also is that you will keep the plants vegetative longer. The second one, along with the rotational grazing system, you've got to have water. And through, I've spent 25 years putting pipeline in, and I'm not done yet. My goal is to have a tank on every quarter. And I think, I'm starting to kind of prove it to myself, but you can manage cattle, I think, easier with water than you can fence. And you cut out, a lot of production. The other thing is, when I was a kid and you got a drought year, you need to dry your ears every once in a while so the dams would go dry, so then you get the ewes in there and clean out the bottoms of them so you could hold water for the next deal. But the thing of it was then you had to sell down cows because you didn't have water. I can grow grass on 6 inches of rain if I got water. And it's way more productive putting the water system in than it is, moving dirt, digging ponds, and that type of thing. If you're all capable of, whether it's well water or it's community water, I've got one really good well, but yet I'm on 2 water systems. I ran out of water once, and I ain't ever going to run out again. And so I've got one rural water system on the north end of the ranch. I got another water system that I bought into on the south end of the ranch. And I got a very productive well in the middle. And then also along with this, I've looped everything so you can isolate areas away. If you have a problem in an area, You can isolate that area. You can run it around the other way and get water from the other direction. So, I mean, you need some flexibility, always flexibility. Third thing that we learned is early weaning drought. You know, our plan this year was, looking the 1st of May, we were hoping we had enough grass to get to the 1st of June. And we were going to, the very first thing we were going to do is wean. You know, getting those calves off of those cows, we've seen it today. And where I noticed it was the activity of the cows drops considerably. And, I was at a customer's place. We went down to summer conference for NCBA, and I was out visiting a customer down there in Texas. He was around Fort Worth there. It was 110 degrees that day. He was weaning calves. And I looked at him, and I said, how in the hell can you do that? You know, and he looked back at me and said, well, you got to drink or they'll die. If you got the water source there, he was right. I called the boys up. I said, get the vaccination ordered. We're putting weaning shots in, and we're gonna wean in a week. And they said, Dad, you're crazy. And I says, well, are you gonna drink or they're gonna die? You know. But that, you know, is a very effective tool. Last year we weaned the 7th of August. We can rent corn stalks, and I knew I had to get to October, you know, with that herd of cows. And I was looking at, and I says, if I wean today, or, you know, I was planning, I can make it to the 1st of October with those cows. And we did it and got the corn stalks. The biggest thing was, you know, after looking at some of the data today, I had those heifers in the lot from the 7th of August to the 10th of June this year. And we got, you know, and I worry quite a little about that, but, you know, our percentage was down some. You know, those cattle were in there a long time, and the only time they'd been on grass, you know, was that short deal in there. But I think we were still at a 65% AI rate on those. I mean, we normally run 70% on yearling heifers, so I mean it did hurt us a little, I believe. Crop aftermath, you know, one of the tricks that I try to do to get crop aftermath rented in a good year, and you'll have it in a bad year. You know, you can stockpile some of that grass. It's going to be there next year. You know, go ahead and or you might really need it next year. Synchronized AI. You know, this costs money, but what we are able to do is we can get 85% to 86% mature cows bred in 25 days. Look at what that does to your calf weights. You know, having a 30-day calving period. The other thing goes along with it, you need good handling equipment. Everything I got's portable. We rent, lease a lot of ground. It's kind of funny, my son's got, two little kids, and they think camping is, you take the camper out, set up in the pasture, and you AI cows. That's camping to those guys. But we have a portable AI barn, you know, like Daniel's equipment. It costs a lot of money, but it'll always bring back, you know, what it costs to begin with. It holds up really well. And basically, our labor force, like I said before, is my son, my nephew, and their wives. Amanda, she does semen preparation. So George Perry was out doing some cows, and Amanda offered to help him do, you know, semen preparation. And George says, "Well, I don't know that you can keep up." And Amanda says, "Well, can you breed over 100 an hour?" And he says, "No, I can keep up." The other thing is, like Chip said, you know, do some good, get some good cattle handling. Either, you know, it's really good. There's quite a few people out around today that give good cattling seminars. You know, if you get a chance to go to one of them, they're worth it. The first one I went to, I was kind of chuckling, you know, shit, I've been handling cattle all my life, you know. But I really come away from that thing with a different attitude. You know, instead of ramming and jamming and hoorahing, one guy can do more with knowing how the cattle are going to move than you can with a whole crew hollering and waving paddles, and you wonder if you're going to get out of there with your life. And along with that, slow stress weaning and preconditioning. I mean, I can't say not enough about getting those shots in your calves. You know, no matter if you're going to do it or keep the calves yourself, or you're going to send them down the road. I mean, in today's, this thing is the most, you know, one of the most important things that you can do to help out the guy that's buying your calves, is get those shots in them. Have a good program. You know, you always hear about a 2% death loss in a feed yard. That's average. The cattle are either, you know, less than 0.5% or they're 10. And I can't stress that enough. The other thing we do, mainly fence line weaning or a version of it, you know, we have backgrounding yard there. So what we'll do is bring the cows and calves in. We'll sort the calves off, kick them back out. And this allows us that we can go ahead, get our, you know, ultrasound pregnancy done on the cows. We'll leave them locked up 3 days. Don't feed them much. Treat them kind of bad, you know. And then we'll just swap them. And I mean, and those calves will come in and hardly bawl, and they'll go on, you know, feed in a day and a half. They're looking for the feed wagon the third day. In the least cost balanced ration, you know, we always talk about that in a feeding situation, but it is really important on a ranching operation, you know, to take a look at, and we've seen some of that today, using the different products out there. You know, take the time, run the rations, and don't feed them cows all they'll eat. You know, you don't need to. Feed them what they need. This is a group of customer steers that just for harvest down and that we had down in Pratt, Kansas. Buy right. Everything you look at, plan on buying. My father, he'd kind of take that to extremes. If he was going to build a shed, he'd take 3 years gathering up material to build the shed. You know, it may be used tin, it may be whatever, but he would take the time to do that. And with the internet today, you can check prices all over the country. If you're wanting to buy a new tractor, you can price shop the things, you know, all over. But no matter whether you're buying cattle, you're buying feed, whatever, take the time to buy right, you know. And I can remember with my dad why it was, I'd miss a deal somewhere, and he said, "Oh, don't worry about it. There's always a better one come along." And he was always right. And the third thing, or the final thing, doing what is easy is not normally the most profitable. And I'll credit that to J. O'Brien. He was Beef Magazine's Stalker of the Year. He said it a little more eloquently than what I usually do, that, doing what is easy won't make you any money. So I thought that was a little better statement. And right there is our goal for our operation, other than she didn't stick AI. But anyway, that heifer, she had a 1,029-pound carcass. She's a yield grade 2 prime, 17.4-inch ribeye area. She brought back $2,358.43. You know, you can spend, the easy thing to do would have been send her the sale barn. The hard thing to do is to take the genetics and the management and finding the feed yard, finding the place to sell her. But, I mean, there was a $500 bill right there. With that, thank you, and I'd look forward to the questions this evening.